Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy John Couch on the other side of the glass. John engineering and producing our program. Well, John, we made it to the last day of June. We are at the halfway point, and I was thinking, my goodness, about 6 months ago, New Year's Eve, we were all thinking, oh, 2020 sounds like it's going to be a fun year, just a ring to it. Man, did that turn out bad, right? Let's hope the other half of the 6 months improve. We can be hopeful, I hope. We are bringing people together here in Southern Arizona on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We begin now with our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. Back in May, the Arizona Supreme Court knocked Kim Owens out of the race for a corporation commission seat, leaving only two Republicans in a primary for three seats on that very influential board. A Republican will need a write-in campaign and win at least 6,600 votes in the primary to win the party's nomination and give the GOP a full slate of candidates for the general election. Otherwise, Republicans would effectively forfeit a seat on the Arizona Corporation Commission to one of three Democrats running for the five-member board. And it's a very important board which regulates utilities, sets electric rates for millions of Arizonans. The incumbent on the Republican side is Leah Marquez Peterson. Leah was appointed to the board last year by Governor Ducey, and Leah joins us now on the live line. Leah, how are you?
Oh, good, Bill. Good to hear you.
This is a strange election cycle. I mean, it's a strange year. Candidates are having a real difficult time getting a message out because just not doing any face-to-face campaigning. How are you approaching this, Leah?
You know, it's been very interesting. As you mentioned, I was appointed by Governor Ducey last May, so it's been over a year now. And I launched my campaign in about August. So I had been campaigning for quite a while before COVID-19 hit, completely changed how we can campaign. Obviously, everything has been from home, virtually, using Zoom. So I have been on dozens and dozens of Zoom calls, reaching out to voters across the state and doing what I can via email and social media. It really has changed the game. And as you also mentioned, you know, the race has changed dramatically, too. When I started in this, there were about nine Republicans running for the three seats that are open. And as of today, there are two of us that are on the ballot and one running as a write-in candidate. So things have changed dramatically.
What is the big issue of this race? And it's, as I mentioned in the intro, this is such an important board with the regulation of our utilities and on, things that people don't even know that your board does. So how are you approaching this?
Yeah, I realized how many people don't truly understand the scope of the work that we do, from regulating utilities like electric, water, gas, and wastewater. But we also do all the business incorporations in the state. We tackle securities fraud. We also handle railroad and pipeline safety. So most don't understand just the breadth of the work that we're doing. But I think the top issue for most folks right now is certainly affordability. We've seen obviously a dramatic shift during COVID-19 since, you know, early March, of folks getting furloughed or laid off or small businesses really suffering. So people are very sensitive to price changes, and we see 70 to 80 rate cases a year. People don't realize that's about how many we see. And so certainly the affordability as well as the reliability of folks' utility services is top of mind. I think affordability was always a top issue for folks, but it's even more of an issue as people look for utility assistance programs or ways in which they can help their families or certainly their businesses as they, you know, live and survive and thrive through COVID-19.
Are you then the only incumbent of the five candidates officially on the ballot?
I am, yes. Unfortunately, my fellow incumbent, he was also challenged in the courts and lost his legal challenge. So I am the only incumbent.
So will you run as a slate with the Republicans if the write-in campaign is successful?
I mean, one interesting thing is we are all clean elections candidates. And really, one of the first actions we took was a code of ethics that we passed as commissioners because there was such a cloud of rumor and corruption and different things going on at the commission that I learned about quickly when I was appointed. So as a clean elections candidate, I certainly wouldn't have the resources I had in my prior campaign when I ran for Congress in CD2. So running and sharing some resources will certainly be a benefit, I think, to all of us who are running for these three seats. So we'll probably see some activity together, but we all are each raising our clean election donations and campaigning separately at this point.
And are you using social media? Is that your primary vehicle, Leah?
Yes, I'm using emails, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, really to get the message out. We are a statewide seat, and most people certainly have heard of the commission, but again, don't realize what we do. So I've been zooming in, if that's a verb, to all the LDs and clubs and groups, chambers, Kiwanis, Rotaries, any that will want to hear from a commissioner and learn about how their community is impacted by the work we do.
The commission was tainted, wasn't it, by a lot of very bad publicity?
It was. Unfortunately, there were a lot of independent expenditures the last couple of races, and it just really had a bad reputation. It's why I was very proud to vote for the Code of Ethics on my first month on the job.
Where were you? So you really haven't been able to hit the road, have you, with all of this?
No, I really haven't. You know, we would feel that things were slowly opening up, and then, of course, the governor's announcement just yesterday. So many events have been canceled or up in the air at this point, which is for the best. I think, you know, we need to ensure that we're safe and we're wearing masks and we're you know, being careful around other folks and staying near our families. So I'm happy just to call in or zoom in as I can so people are aware of the race. You know, our early the mail-in ballots go out July 8th. That's next week. So we need to make sure people are paying attention to not only the local races, and I see signs everywhere for that as we do get out here and there, but that we have statewide races. And I'm the only statewide candidate from Southern Arizona at this time, and I'm the only commissioner from outside of Maricopa County. So I'm hoping folks hear that message and realize how important my perspective is.
Are you the only Hispanic statewide office holder right now?
Yes, I'm also the first Latina, so Hispanic woman, in any statewide role in the history of Arizona, which is shocking.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2019, when I was appointed, I was told that and thought, gosh, that's hard to believe. But I researched, and yes, that's the case.
Speaking with Leah Marquez-Peterson, Republican for the Arizona Corporation Commission, what can we look for if you are elected? What will you do to try to be an advocate for consumers?
You know, I've been working hard at really focusing on the affordability of our utilities and realizing we handle not just in our community, TEP and Southwest Gas, but small water companies. There are more than 300 that we regulate throughout the state. So I'm really looking towards what we can do to make sure that rates are affordable. We're not seeing rate hikes, that we have utility assistance programs and people know how to reach those. In our case here in Pima County, that's the Pima County Community Action Center. If anybody needs assistance, they should be going there. I've also been putting a particular focus on broadband. Only 25% of rural Arizona has broadband, and we probably take it for granted because we live in urban Tucson, or, you know, folks might live in Phoenix. But really, we have a lot of expansion and accessibility issues in Arizona, and that's an area I'm continuing to focus on also.
Some states, Texas comes to mind, went the deregulation route, and it wound up with, hundreds of different utility companies getting in the act. Where are we in that arena as far as that perhaps being in Arizona's future?
We continue to have workshops and discussions on this. You know, and my perspective has been that certainly supportive of competition, but I think that some of the states that have enacted this type of deregulation have seen unintended consequences. There's been consumer fraud and some different protections that perhaps should have been there in place before they launched. So I'm stepping carefully into this bill and really doing further research and studying how, you know, dozens of other states have tackled this. I think there are ways we can encourage competition without it being a fully deregulated market, but I'm still looking at all the different information that I'm receiving.
All right, Leah, we will let you go. What about your website?
Yeah, it's voteforleah.com, voteforlea.com, and I really appreciate people going there and volunteering and learning more about me. Thank you so much, Bill.
Do you think the name recognition from your run from Congress has helped?
I think in Southern Arizona, yes. You know, the CD2 encompasses Pima and Cochise County, and I've done a lot of work in Santa Cruz County with my work at the Tucson Hispanic Chamber, so that's helpful. But for any Southern Arizonan to run statewide, the challenge really is Maricopa County, which carries more than 60% of the votes, and further north. So as soon as, you know, our state, our world is back to normal, I really need to get out there and meet folks and build name recognition further north.
All right, Leah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great one.
You too. Leah Marquez Peterson, Republican, running for one of those three seats now open on the 5-member Arizona Corporation Commission board. It's part of our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. All of the interviews done here and the morning programs, all are available for you at kvoi.com. We've got them kind of all warehoused for you, one convenient one-stop shopping to find out about the candidate. Shelley Fishman is not a candidate right now for anything except being a very knowledgeable, nice guy who follows the financial markets. And Shelley just kind of gave me a thumb that isn't really going anywhere. In other words, not up, not down, what they would call flat on Wall Street. Shelley's next.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how are you?
I'm well today, Bill. How are you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you very much. 1 week ago today, you were holding down the fort with my old friend James Reel from KUAT. And you guys had a great show. And by the way, I want to direct people to buckmastershow.com to listen to a very entertaining hour, Shelley.
Thank you, Bill. We had a lot of fun doing it and played some music for people and talked about how American music during times of crisis kind of reflected that crisis in ways that, you know, might not be the ways you'd expect.
You know, I was listening to the program. I will admit it, I was not listening live, but shortly after, and that's one of the nice things about buckmastershow.com. We've got all of the programs up there, and even if you were listening live, and we were up in Oregon, and I was walking probably on the beach at that time while you and James were doing your thing, but you know, you can listen to the program, and I was expecting the theme music to come right up, the usual Buckmaster Show theme music, but you brought in kind of a different open, and that was cute.
Yeah, we started off with music from before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And ended with music 1945, New York, New York, from Leonard Bernstein. So it was about a 100-year span, and it reflected the propensity of Americans to look at the bright side rather than look at the downside of things.
And we sure could use that right now, I'm telling you, Shelley. Again, thank you. Kudos to you. You always do such a very nice job in anchoring for me while I'm away. How are we doing right now on looking to Congress to kind of to stimulate and keep things from totally going south with our markets?
Oh, so much for the bright side.
Now the bad news.
Right, yeah. So The economy is in recession right now. We were in recession. We had a decline in the first quarter. We probably would have had a decline regardless of whether the pandemic had hit or not, but it would have been a very mild decline and probably very short-lived. However, what we have now is a situation where we're down in the first quarter. I think the numbers were something like 6% down. In the second quarter, which ends today, I don't know what the number will be, but it's likely to be in the 15 or 16% down from the second quarter of last year. And that's the way to measure a recession, not month over month, but rather how on a year-over-year basis, if you've had two quarters of GDP growth that is negative over the prior year, then you know you're in a recession.
I was going to ask you, Shelley, could you, at the low point, when all this really hit the fan, we were down, I think about on the Dow, 36%, something like
that. Oh, something like that.
Do you have any idea where we might be now at the midway point of the year? Have we put a good dent in that 36%?
Well, we've come back more than halfway. Remember,
okay. That's what I was looking for.
The high was around 28,000. The low was around 18,000. So if you look at 23,000, that's the midpoint, and we're at 25-something right now. Mm-hmm. So we're above the midpoint coming back. The question is it sustainable?
Right.
Is it overpriced? And if so, why? And we need to really look at corporate profits to see whether a Dow that is, you know, essentially at 23 times earnings is, not a Dow, but an S&P 500 of 23 times earnings is sustainable in this economy. I don't believe it is. I think the steady state is more likely to be in the 23,000 range. And one of the problems is quite frankly, that what this pandemic has done in closing down the economy is it's taken cash out of the economy so that consumers are staying home more. You know, they're not spending money the way they would normally spend it in restaurants and buying goods and traveling. And that's not just those people who are directly affected because their jobs are affected. It's the middle class and the upper middle class who, for safety reasons, are just not spending money right now. And in an economy that's 70% consumer, you have a real problem because that money would normally bleed right through the economy. You know, you go to a restaurant, then they're buying food from their suppliers. The suppliers are paying others. So when that slows down significantly, it really has a tremendous effect on our economy as a whole. And that's not something, despite what Peter Navarro and you know, Larry Kudlow say, that we're not going to recover out of that. That's going to take some time. And it's especially now that we're seeing, if not another surge, a continuation of the first surge. And states, I think now 32 of the 50 states have reimposed some closing regulations. That's going to have kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy roll through the economy as people continue to not spend money as they normally would.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not going to be the first round shutdown that we saw. We're not going to go back to that. I think things are going to, business will continue, but it will have and is having a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, and keep in mind that the closures happened toward the middle, toward the end of March.
Right.
And so even though we saw a downturn in the first quarter's GDP growth, most of the impact of the closures comes in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to see, despite some optimism at the end of May and some through June, which is we're backing off from right now, is we're going to see the financial effects of the closed economy really coming as we see statistics for the second quarter. Now, keep in mind, some of those statistics will look okay because we're looking at coming off of the bottoms. So remember, if you drop 50% in order to get it all back, you got to increase 100%.
Oh, yeah.
To get. So,
that's right.
So we're seeing some nice consumer numbers today in terms of sentiment, big increases from where we were a couple of weeks ago, but that's still well below normal. And so what we as an economy need to think about is two things. As individuals, we need to understand what our situations are, what our cash flow situations are, and how or if we need to be preserving funds if this were to go, say, till the end of the year, which is not unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're in a situation where you're either laid off or might be laid off or have some way abbreviated cash flow positions, then you need to really take that into account. Otherwise, you could get yourself in a situation as this goes on where you run out of money, and that's not a good thing.
Aren't the stimulus programs running out of money or
they are ending
soon, right?
They are. So many of the stimulus proposals, or many of the stimulus packages, especially the unemployment, the additional $600 a week in unemployment insurance, runs out in July. And so that's a not insignificant amount of money in a person's, you know, in a person's cash flow for their week that allows them to buy food and buy the things they need and maybe even spend as if things were a little bit normal. Now, there has been complaints, especially on the Republican side, that so many of the people who are getting that additional stimulus are actually making more with the financial assistance than they would have had they been working.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that's an old
shibboleth, yeah.
But what's important is to realize that the country has to do something to maintain the stimulus even if it changes flavor or changes direction, or you know, we need to continue to stimulate this economy.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know, Bill. We need to find ways of continuing to pour cash into the economy so that the economy can slowly recover. My fear is that by not doing that, it becomes this self-fulfilling snowball on the downward slope that could be very, very hard to recover from. Now, you know, classical economists will tell you what the only way to do that is to incur greater and greater deficits. And my answer to that is yes, so what?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen any inflation caused by these deficits, and I don't mean not just recently. We haven't seen any inflation in almost two decades,
wow.
And we've had deficits for all of that period of time. So what we need is leadership from the federal government right now to bolster up direct stimulus to people, to help the states, because right now the states have been really hurting, and they're going to be laying off people unless they're getting stimulus from the feds. We've got to get healthcare funds. We've got to make sure that the pandemic testing and vaccinations, once they're available, are free for nothing for individuals. And critical workers who are either laid off or are working in abbreviated schedules get stimulus from the federal government.
Yeah, I hope
that'll save us.
I hope everybody can get a test and it'll be free of charge and
absolutely
easy to do. You get immediate results. Yep. I mean, who knows? Even home testing, something like that.
Going
that's
to take
what we need.
Leadership
yep.
from the federal government and courage from the federal government. And if we don't see that, then this recession will maintain till the end of the year.
Shelley, have a great rest of the week. Thank you very much.
You too, Bill.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, It is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. During the shutdown, really starting in March, a lot of people turned to their own backyard for entertainment, amusement, beauty, and I'm talking about gardening. Green Things is your go-to place as they celebrate their 50th year and still growing. They're your go-to place on 13 acres for amazing plants, trees, annuals. You can even get great advice on starting a garden, kind of a victory garden, growing your own vegetables and all sorts of wonderful things. How about some fruit trees? They've got it all at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Some of the most knowledgeable people on the staff there. If they don't know it when you're asking a question, they get on the little walkie-talkie, I got a question about a particular rose bush, and they'll get you the answer pretty much right away. So check it out, greenthingsaz.com, and of course, zocalovillage.com. That's their other beautiful component of the property for all that great pottery, Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, and that's at Zocalo Village. So check it out. Dr. Mark Sykes with us on the live line. Dr. Sykes, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute for nearly 50 years. Hard to believe, coming up on the 50th anniversary here in a couple of years of this nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. How are you, Dr. Sykes?
Just great, Bill.
Hanging in there?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm disappointed with the gym closures because now I can't do my lap swimming, which I was really enjoying getting back to.
Yeah. So you're still kind of working from home?
Well, we opened up the PSI offices last week and a week before last, and I'm not requiring anybody to come in because if they're not comfortable, then that's fine because we've set up remote working very well.
Yeah.
And right now a fraction of people's coming in, and I'm looking around thinking of your previous guests of ways I can get our employees tested for the virus.
Yeah.
So that people can have some confidence in coming into the workplace. But unfortunately right now that doesn't seem to be easily available.
Yeah, it's really a shame. It would be nice to have a real simple test, like to go to Walgreens or CVS, like you would get a flu shot and say, I'd like a test. They swab your nose or whatever they do, spit in a cup, and we'll have your results in 10 minutes, go shopping, we'll announce when your test is ready, and there you go. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah, well, I'd like to be able to come to the offices and take care of 50 people all in one fell swoop.
Yep, there you go. So, the launch of NASA's next Mars rover has been delayed by some kind of a contamination concern on the ground. And whenever I see that in a headline, contamination concern, I think of COVID. Something happened there, but I guess it's something else that could bother it.
Yeah,
right?
No, it was probably some dirt or something, or just it was a more of a minor thing. But they take extra care when you're going to be launching a billion-dollar spacecraft someplace else.
Well. Speaking of Mars, your team made some really important news in the scientific community, a new paper by one of your team members having to do with the kind of the ancient highlands of Mars.
Yeah, there's regions on Mars that are some of the most ancient surfaces in the solar system, going back over 4 billion years. And it turns out what our people figured out, Alexis Rodriguez was the lead author of this Nature paper, was that it seems to be covered in like silt. And so these highland areas, it's kind of like, you know, how the Alps, you know, you find seashells and stuff up there because they used to be on the bottom of the oceans.
Yeah.
Well, these highland areas are areas that, except they weren't covered by water. They seem to have been covered by mud raining down from the sky and covering the surface a kilometer deep in this muddy silt. And so how would that happen? Well, first of all, it was, you know, 4 billion years ago. There's a lot of water on Mars. But it's also a time of giant impacts, both on Mars and the Earth. And so these impacts were spewing enormous amounts of materials into the air. But dusty materials, some of which may have already been pre-existing from like glaciers around the surface of the planet at the time. That's a very efficient way of making silt, and it just coated these ancient areas with mud that then ultimately dried out, and so you could tell that it's silt and not sand because winds over the billions of years have carved channels into this material, and silt behaves differently than larger particles. And so that was kind of their diagnostic. So absolutely fascinating, and it goes back to a time when life was getting its toehold, you know, on the Earth, which raises the question, could there have been stuff going on Mars? And even more interesting, linking it back to Mars 2020, is it turns out that Mars 2020 is going to be landing near one of their study areas, and some of the material it should be sampling may be some of this material from the highlands that's from these muddy rains 4 billion years ago.
Wow. When I hear highlands, I think of the oldest highlands. How about a Scotch whiskey coming out of Mars?
Well, then I'd be on my way right now. So.
I know you would. So it is crazy to think about rivers and glaciers. Like, think about, like, mm-hmm. Glacier National Park up on Mars, like, four billion years ago. But it is weird to think about that there were, you know, Mars might have been a really cool place at that time.
Well, and there may be glaciers there today. One of our founders, Bill Hartman, a few years ago, was identifying areas on Mars where there appear to be glaciers underneath dust.
Wow.
Underneath it. And because Mars tilts on its axis, it kind of wobbles around. And so there are times when the poles are tilted over much more, and so the equatorial regions can get very cold. And get glaciers having formed on them. There's some evidence of glaciation in these areas that he predicted using a global climate model that was based on the Earth's global climate model, and it said, well, this is where you'd get this formation of glaciers. And he went and looked in these areas from, you know, spacecraft imagery, and by gosh, it looks like there's the kind of terrain that you associate with glaciers moving and some radar evidence that there's something under the dirt.
Fascinating stuff. Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. And stay well, my friend. Folks can find out more. Find out more about Planetary Science Institute, of which I am a member. Try to support your organization. The website is psi.edu, like for education. Thanks, Mark.
Yes. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Mark Sykes with us on the live line. Dan Gibson's coming up next from Visit Tucson. Marketing Tucson, or marketing really anywhere during the coronavirus, is a real challenge for the tourism industry. We'll talk with Dan about that right after this in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. When you are ready to do some traveling, our friends over at Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, will be ready to open with open arms to welcome you back to a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org for the latest on really great places to stay and so many activities over there in that beautiful area of the southwestern United States. And, you know, we tell people and we send a lot of people over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And one of the big selling points, of course, it's cooler. The elevation over there, anywhere from about 5,500 feet to 7,000 feet. And so we've kind of been tracking it here during the midday time. It's usually about 10 to 15 degrees cooler over in Silver City. So again, the place to go For your planning needs, go to southwestnewmexico.org. All right, let's go now on the live line to Anthony Jimeno of All Sports Tucson. Anthony is one of our two dozen or so regular contributors to the program. AG, how are you?
I'm okay.
Well, good. It's actually very serendipitous to have you on the show because you saw the announcement and you guys posted some things about the announcement from the governor, and that led then to Dave Hickey, the U of A athletic director, putting a pause on athlete training. Could you give us kind of the latest, AG?
Well, that is kind of the latest, and as with a lot of stuff around COVID and around college athletics, which is what we're talking about, check back with me in 24 hours because it may be a different story. So a lot of universities have started to accept student athletes back on campus for voluntary workouts for now. For example, Clemson, I believe they have like in the high 30s of their football players who returned and tested positive.
Wow.
It's a similar case, not in terms of those exact high numbers, but Alabama, Michigan, Auburn, pretty much everywhere. I mean, almost everybody has at least some positives, and they have to deal with that. Now, if you ask me if I was maybe more optimistic or less about college sports in the fall, than say maybe a week ago, I'd probably say a little bit less. One of the things we saw just yesterday, and this is something which may come up more and more, the Ivy League, which plays lower division football, they're already talking about considering playing this football season in April and May.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to remember, back when all this COVID stuff broke kind of back in the second week of March, the Ivy League was the first to actually respond to it and respond to it correctly because they shut down their basketball tournament.
That's right.
So maybe they're smarter than the rest of us. Well, and if they're talking about already postponing the football seasons in the spring, maybe we should listen.
Well, I was just reflecting, and the interview I did, I'll pat myself on the back, and I don't want to do this just for kudos for me, but I had Dr. Robbins, the U of A president, on the program in late March, and at that point, he said, and it did make national news, that he did not believe it was going to be possible to do a college football season in the fall. And he was talking then, Anthony Jimeno, about a spring football season. And now that's back on the table.
Right. And I think it has to be on the table because the cost of not playing a football season is so enormous to all these athletic departments, and by extension, somewhat the universities. There's a lot of money we're talking about. Some of the stuff that's been also bandied about in the last week is, for example, the Pac-12, you would only play conference games. So maybe you're only playing 9 conference games instead of 9 conference games and 3 your non-conference games. Or maybe you're just playing within conference to keep you geographically close, although in the Pac-12 that's very difficult because it's a far-flung league. Maybe you're picking up a couple extra non-conference games, or maybe you're pushing all that back. So really, all options still have to be on the table, and they have to be on the table until the very last minute before you say nope, can't play, because there's so much money at stake.
Yeah.
So if we get to September and there's been no camps or campuses are shut down again, that next step must be, okay, we're going to play in the spring. We're going to kick the can down the road, cross our fingers, and hope that come the spring, either the infection rate is so slow or, you know, best of all, there's some kind of vaccine, or somehow we start controlling COVID instead of the other way around. They have to keep that option on the table until the very last second.
Well, I can't foresee any kind of decision from the U of A until this latest order from the governor. It's a 30-day order. That would take us right up to about August 1st. That is, as you put it, kicking the can down the road, and that's getting real close to decision time, Anthony.
Yeah, that's a little too tight for Arizona, which is scheduled to start what college football people call week zero, which is there's always a few college football games before everybody opens up in week one. And then Arizona is one of that with their home game against Hawaii in late August. That's not enough time, because basically what schools want is at least having everybody on campus for a couple weeks of conditioning. Then you've got about 4 weeks of camp. So late July, getting everybody back on campus at that point is really a little too late to start the season in late August. The timetable is really tight.
The athletic director, Hickey, was trying to get clarification from the governor, I believe, whether the current situation with athletes on campus, whether they could continue to work out. I don't know if you've heard anything further on that.
Not today. I haven't seen anything on that. Okay. But, you know, UVA, and we're also talking, obviously, football is the one that kind of on everybody's mind, but there's also volleyball and other soccer, sports that start early, you know, fall sports that athletes are on campus and need to start ramping up if they're going to play. So it's interesting. And again, now we got some of the pro leagues. The NBA is supposed to be starting up at the end of July. Major League Baseball is supposed to be starting up in 3.5 weeks or so. The NHL planning a restart. Is all that going to go off? And is there any, and if it does or doesn't, what lessons can college athletics learn from that?
You know, in some ways, we know very little than where the last time I talked to you about a month ago. I mean, it's like you say, check in a few hours and the picture will be different. So.
Yeah, it kind of goes up and down. I was optimistic for a while. I'll tell you, there's a great appetite. There's a huge appetite for college sports to resume, especially college football. And we've talked in months past about, you know, my role with the Lindy's preseason football magazines. And yep. We went ahead and printed, and those are on the newsstand and et cetera, et cetera. And they're doing really well. People have a big appetite, maybe just for that, hey, well, this is a normal thing I do in the summer, and I'm really anxious.
Gotta run. Hey, they, if nothing else, Anthony Jimeno, they'll be collector's items for sure. Thank you, AG. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Anthony Jimeno of All Sports Tucson for his input on a story that continues to change all the time. On behalf of John Couch, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.